Welcome to this episode of Against the Mountains of Madness. I'm your host, Jason.
And I'm John C. Wright.
And on this episode, we're going to have a chat about the Prime Directive. Is it a good idea? So, John, you're a Star Trek fan. I'm a Star Trek fan. The Prime Directive. What is it? Well, apart from Starfleet Order Number 1.
The Prime Directive is the Prime Non-Interference Directive was introduced in, I think, the second season. And it basically it says that that Starfleet personnel cannot interfere with the natural growth and development of any alien primitive planet, even at the expense of their own life. It is a question of the highest moral order. And if you like, I can even read you the I can even read you the wording. Now, in the show itself, they never actually read out the Prime Directive, but in some of the non-canonical sources, like the Star Trek workbook or something, so it says. The Prime Directive prohibits Starfleet personnel and spacecraft from interfering in the normal development of any society and mandates that any Starfleet vessel or crew member is expendable to prevent violation of this rule. No Starfleet personnel may interfere with the normal activity and healthy development of a light alien life and culture. Such interference includes introducing superior knowledge, strength, or technology to a world whose society is incapable of handling such advantages wisely. Starfleet personnel may not violate this Prime Directive even to save their own lives and ship, unless they're acting to right an earlier violation or accidental contamination of the culture. This directive takes precedence over any and all other considerations. So that is the wording of the Prime Directive. No interference with a growing and developing alien culture.
Okay.
Okay. Now, and I know why it was put in there. Because as a writer, it's most important to have some moral conflict raging in the mind of a captain whose ship is about to be destroyed. If Vol or Landru, the computer running the planet of the Archons, is about to destroy your crew. Hmm. In fact, I think the episode where they land on it looks like an old West world and it's run by a computer. Yep. It's perfectly peaceful, but the computer has to reset once every certain period of time, and so there's 24 hours where everyone goes wild and riots called the Festival. Do you remember this episode?
I do not.
I think that's the one. Landru the computer. Landru was a pacifist who persuaded everyone to join in a world state that was run by the computer who would enforce peace on everyone. And he had these robed beings called, oh, good Lord, I can't remember now, the enforcers, directors, whoever. It enforced a utopia of peace. And it was run by a computer. And it attacked the Starship Enterprise when it came. Mm. And the Kirk had to decide whether or not to destroy the computer in order to free the people. But if he frees them, they're going to have sin, sickness, and fist fights again. See?
Yep.
And in that episode, when they leave, they left behind it a team to try to guide the people back to normal human development. You say, and even in the very first episode where it's introduced, Spock objects that the Prime Directive of non-interference says they can't interfere with this culture, even though it's threatening to them. And Kirk replies that only has to do with a living and growing culture, one that's continuing to evolve toward progress, and that this static culture where no one has any liberty is not fit for human life, and therefore his conscience was clean.
So, I mean, he's right, but.
In the setup, he is right. Yes, as it was set up, the show did not end with the computer is destroyed, the various races of the Archon planet fall into a global war with each other, and then exterminate each other like the guys who are half black on one side and half white on the other side, who did destroy their planet thanks to their war and bigotry. In the setup, he's completely correct.
It's subtle. Star Trek is subtle.
Well, it also, but here's the thing. As a writer's trick, the idea that advanced cultures should not interfere with less advanced cultures sounds, on the surface, perfectly morally comprehensible. It sounds like it's actually the kind of thing that an enlightened and kind-hearted, good and just people would do, doesn't it?
Well, I'm not sure. I mean, well, there was an episode of, was it Lower Decks, maybe? I don't know. I saw a Star Trek episode. I can remember it, but I can't place it. And it was dealing with the Prime Directive, and they took someone that was it was the Orville, where they have something similar.
Yes, because the Orville is actually the best sequel to Star Trek that Star Trek ever did not do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they had the same sort of principle of non-interference, and they took the character who was questioning it, saying, why would you let my world be just, why wouldn't you help? You could do all this to help me, to help our people. They took him to a simulation and they went, see this world? Here, we helped them. Here it is 100 years later, and it's just destroyed. Because, you know, I mean, if you give A-bombs to primitives, they will use them, that's essentially the concern of the Prime Directive. If you give people technology that's well beyond what they can handle.
Keep in mind that science fiction writers have been warning for years what happens if you have a technology beyond what you're morally capable of handling. Mm. And that idea became a commonplace mainstream idea after World War II, which ended by the development of a science fictional superweapon called the atomic bomb.
Well, yes.
See? So when Star Trek was written, it was an idea that was not only in the forefront of the minds of the writers and of the people watching the show because of the threat of atomic war. I mean, they were actually living in the area where our technology had outstripped our morality.
Yeah.
Okay. But all Americans, and I assume most Australians as well, always feel a slight pang of guilt about the fact that we conquered the Indians, that we conquered the Indian tribes and took over their land. You see, now as an American, I of course like living on this land, and I think everyone's better off. But I also happen to know that the Indians were treated badly by Andrew Jackson in my country, for example, the founder of the Democrat Party, and that Democrats still continue to keep them on reservations and don't let them do things like take out mortgages on their houses so they can invest in businesses, and you know that they're micro regulated and kept in an inferior and impoverished position.
So they help them basically in the way Democrats normally do.
Yeah, they help them by harming them. They help them by harming them. Greetings, world. This is John C. Wright. I and my compatriot, Jason Rennie, take up arms weekly against the mountains of madness that are afflicting and overwhelming the modern age. You are welcome here among like-minded souls, and I hope we have provided a work of insight, hope, or humor, and perhaps an explanation of the insanity that is the modern age. For more content and conversation on these and other fascinating topics of philosophy, science fiction, and current events, please visit our Substack at atmom.substack.com. Tips, bribes, and generous patronage are warmly encouraged. Thank you. Now, I don't feel any guilt about American tribes where they started they raided, carried off women, killed women and children, and so on and so forth, and then got a retaliation from the cavalry. That does not bother my conscience one bit.
No.
But there are also if you're an advanced gun-using a highly civilized people attacking a few scattered barbarian tribes who are hunter gatherers or wanderers, they don't really stand a chance in the long run.
No.
You see? So, I think the Prime Directive was that you would prevent things like that. You would prevent the Spaniards from interfering with the growing living culture of the Aztecs and the interference with their religious practices, which, as we all know, kept the sun lit. And Tetlocitlan and Tlahomatek are all going to be really, you know, cheesed off if they don't have their sacrifices.
Well, I suppose the opposite.
Do you see the good and the bad of it? We wipe out the Pequod, which is not necessarily a good thing to have done. And the Trail of Tears brings glory to no American history book. But I'm sorry, Pizarro, Cortez was a hero. I don't care what you think about the glory of the Aztec Empire. They were as nightmarish a people as ever breathed air on Earth. Okay.
Yeah, they were demonic.
They were devil worshippers. Okay. Even Conan the Barbarian could not find some haunted pyramid containing a serpent god that was any worse than what those guys really did in real life.
Actually,
okay, and now those guys were all Christianized and they're going to heaven. So I do not have any. I have no pangs of guilt about that.
Well,
that said, I'm sorry. Trail of Tears. The Indians were just cheated of land they were promised. You know,
I would note with the Aztecs. So When we were putting this episode idea together, there were two contrasting ideas to look at. We got the Prime Directive, which is just leave him alone already. We have David Brin's Uplift idea from his novels by the same names, where you find a pre-sentient species and you uplift them into sentience. Then you are their patron species for 1,000 years. They're your clients, which is sort of indentured servitude, but you have deep obligations to look after them and help them to be ready to enter galactic civilization. Go on.
David Brin's Uplift is a fascinating idea. And if you saw 2001 A Space Odyssey, you should know that whoever the monolith builders were, they had an obligation to come and rule us under the David Brin system, because that was an uplift act. I don't know if you remember what I'm talking about. Yeah, in the opening of 2001, a black monolith comes down from outer space, and the primitive ape men, when they see it, gain intelligence and turn into us. So they throw a bone in the air and it turns into a spaceship. If you want to just summarize a geologic era of cultural progress.
Yes.
You see. So, but unlike the Brin universe, that we had to go find them, and they apparently were going to uplift astronaut Bowman into some sort of psychic star child or whatever that meant. If you can understand the ending of that movie, then you've got one up on me. But in David Brin's, made a lot more sense, because it was basically indentured servitude for 1,000 years. We create your race, and so you serve us until you're ready to take your place at the table as an equal.
Yes.
That's the idea.
Now, of course, you could have a more modest version of that, which is you find primitives and you help them industrialize and take their place, you know, join everyone else. That's sort of an extreme version of that, because you start with a pre-sentient sophonts. And of course, at the other extreme, we have the Stargate approach to the problem, which is you turn up on a world, you meet the primitives, you inform them all of their gods are false, and you give them a machine gun. So
that reminds me of the old saying, which is if you give a primitive a machine gun, he can fight the false gods for a day. But if you teach him how to make a machine gun, he can fight the false gods for a lifetime. So there's the Stargate approach.
Yes,
the Stargate approach is also very American.
Well,
hey, let me tie these two concepts back together. In Star Trek, in the Prime Directive, in the first episode that it was introduced, was the Enterprise had to decide whether to interfere with a primitive culture that was threatening them. But it was a culture that was run by a computer. It was a false utopia, okay? So no one was really rooting for it. But in a later episode, they found that the Klingons were smuggling weapons into a one half of a primitive culture that was fighting a global war, one half against the other half. And so the Star Trek people, the Federation, had to decide whether or not to smuggle weapons in to arm the other half to give them parity, so that the clients of the Klingons, the slavers, in other words, the communists, if I may, didn't just take over. And it was a not very subtle metaphor for helping the South, helping the South against the North in the communist takeover of Vietnam. See, so in that one, the Prime Directive did not seem to have absolute sway over the Star Trek, and we were giving machine guns to people so they could shoot up the space aliens that were helping their enemies. If that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Now, that poses what I think is kind of a deep moral quandary. If you're the Roman Empire, what you do is you go in and you find some tribe that is fighting against its neighbors, and you pick one side, you divide them so they're fighting each other, and then you pick one side and say, hey, we'll help you. We'll just move in some troops and a procurator or two, and we'll give you some advice as to how to run things, and we'll set up trade between us so you'll get wealthy and we'll get wealthy. And then the Romans just don't leave, and then they wait for some excuse, and they just take over more and more of your way of living. And it worked. The Romans conquered all the empire, all the world that they knew about, except for Persia. You know?
When the
Prime Directive has an exception that allows you to help two guys in a war, then it can easily turn into the Roman Empire, so that seems very dubious. Yet on the other hand, are you just going to sit on your hands while the Klingons take over everywhere? You see the problem?
That's the problem, yeah. No, I do. I was going to say, the Stargate approach, in a sense, is what the Spaniards did with the Aztecs, too. They found this absolutely horrendous, demonic society that was murdering like was just sacrificing people from dawn till dusk.
Now, let's be fair. Some historians think the Aztecs exaggerated how many people they killed to make themselves look more badass.
But everybody.
those historians, by the way, have been killed by Aztecs. I just should mention that they didn't return.
But I would note, like, I mean, the Spaniards could never have conquered the Aztecs on their own. They turned up, and all of the tribes that the Aztecs were preying upon for sacrifices joined with them.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes, like, right.
And then overthrew them.
It's not as if the Aztecs dealt with the Spaniards on an honest fashion. What they did was that the Montezuma was actually kind of clever about it. The first attempt to fling the Spaniards back into the sea was by a tribe, I believe, that was not Aztec itself, and they just got slaughtered. And the news came back to because Aztecs in their steel breastplates had the Spaniards in their steel breastplates. The Aztecs had no weapons that could harm them, and it was like watching the War of the Worlds by H.G. Wells, where the humans would fire their ineffectual guns at the flying disc saucers. Excuse me, if you're talking about the movie version, in the movie the Martians were protected by a force field, so all our weapons just bounced. Okay. In the book, it's a lot better because at least the Thunder Child manages to decapitate a Martian war machine when it's fighting with in the ocean. But be that as it may, I'm digressing myself. So Montezuma set up a trap for the Spaniards, asking them to go into a certain town and meet with his peoples. And the peoples who were going to set up to the people who were surrounding him to trap him and kill him got betrayed by the local tribes, who warned the Spaniards exactly what was going on. So when the Spaniards walked into the trap, they were ready for them, and they just captured the leaders of the they were invited to a feast, okay? Mm. And they captured the leaders of the feast and held them at gunpoint and then just killed everyone, okay? So it's not as if Montezuma didn't stick a stick into the hornet's nest. I'm sorry, I can't make myself feel that he was in the right for any of that, you see.
Mm.
But you're exactly correct. The Aztec Empire would not have been toppled if the Spaniards had not had help from the surrounding peoples.
Well, if all the locals didn't hate the Aztecs,
yeah,
for what
yeah.
they were doing,
right,
I mean,
right,
you know.
So here's an example I always think of about the Prime Directive, as opposed to the Stargate Directive, which is arm the locals, okay?
Yeah.
If I was in England in, I don't know, the 3rd century BC, I don't remember when the Romans came, when Julius Caesar landed. While being invaded by the Romans is terrible, because no one likes to be invaded by the Romans. On the other hand, when they conquer you, you get public baths and aqueducts and paved roads, and you get a lot of benefits. Now, as an Englishman, of course, my freedom is much more important, so I'd be happy to stand with Queen Boadicea to defy them, and yet, I'm sorry, England would be much poorer off, and we'd still be worshiping trees and committing blood sacrifices at Stonehenge if it were not for that. We'd be as backward and awkward as the Germans if it weren't for that. So, sorry, no shame on our German friends, but you guys did create Marx and Hitler.
Well, so. I was thinking, in one sense, the opposite of the Prime Directive is the English colonial concept of the white man's burden. I mean,
yes.
the English colonization was certainly was ugly at times and could have been done better, but that's probably true of most things in history. But
I've never seen it done better than the way the English did it. They did brutal things. I agree. They did horrible things. I agree. But not compared to the Belgians.
Not compared
to the Germans.
No, that's
not compared to the French.
That's certainly true. I mean, they could have been worse than they were.
Yes.
Not compared to the Romans.
Right. I don't believe the British ever crucified anyone.
But the point was, like, they saw it as their mission to civilize the savages and bring them the benefits of civilization. Right. Well, I mean, whatever you can jump up and down about it as much as you like, but that is at least a fairly noble motive. I mean, nobody really wants to talk about it and just wants to paint the whole thing as evil and terrible. But
I noticed that they have trial by jury in India.
Well, see, this is it. I mean, like, prior to the English coming to India, wives would be burned when their husbands died. They would be thrown on, they were expected to be thrown on the funeral pyre and die along with their husbands. And the English just turned up. It was
called sooty.
Yes. And the English just turned up and said, we don't do that here.
It's better than that. The local Hindu objected and said, sir, this is our custom. You can't interfere with it.
Mm.
And the British military governor said, yes, we English also have a custom, which is that after you committed murder, we erect a gallows and hang you in the public square. So you may carry out your custom and we'll carry out ours.
And we'll carry it out and be done with it, yes.
And be done with it.
But it's historically, like, it's very difficult to argue historically that everywhere that England colonized, and the longer they colonized them, the better, is better today than everywhere next door that didn't get the benefits of that. And I mean,
correct.
And this, correct. And I don't have to sit there and go, therefore colonialism was wonderful and there was nothing wrong with it. I mean, like, no. You can still be critical of it and say, well, it could have been done better, but
yeah, there's no way to conquer a people without being brutal. Okay, I'm sorry. It's a miserable business. But the British were fairly civilized about it, and yet even they committed acts of atrocity that stain their histories. It happens.
Yeah, like, I get it. It's history, and it's messy, and it's imperfect, and whatnot. But all of those places are better off than the places that didn't benefit from it. And I mean,
right.
I mean,
the big question is: if I was English and the Caesar was coming, I would say I'd rather be a dirty, smelly barbarian, but free, than a slave to the Roman monster.
I agree.
Now, that's of course very high and noble coming from me. I am not Conan the Barbarian. I do not think barbarians are more noble than corrupt civilized people. I love civilization. Civilization is objectively better than barbarism because, for one thing, barbarians will mimic it. If you live next door,
yes.
And will cross the border and join and become mercenary troops when you become too lazy to field your own troopers, which is exactly what happened to the Romans.
That's what happened.
So if you feel any anger at the British for colonizing places and uplifting them, if I can misuse that word a little bit,
no, it's fair.
Well, don't worry. It happened to them. The Romans conquered them. You know.
Well, I mean,
now when the Romans left at the time, when the Romans left at the time of Constantine, the British fell into a dark ages. Okay, so history is even handed in the cruelty with which it spreads things across the epochs. But again, to return to the main question, is the Prime Directive really so absurd? I think of it as absurd, and yet my friends who suffer from liberal guilt say, "Yeah, but look at what happens when a more advanced culture reaches a less advanced culture. Sometimes the less advanced culture just gives up." They like their suicide rates climb. They just stop working. They, you know, if you're an Eskimo and you're living next to Canada, now I don't think of the Canadians as an advanced culture. Don't get me wrong, because but I'm kidding, my Canadian brethren. Most of you are Christian. At best you might turn into a cargo cultist. Are you familiar with the cargo cult?
I am from familiar with the cargo cult. But explain in case anyone doesn't know. Hilarious.
It's slightly hilarious, but it's actually very sad. There's a group of primitive tribesmen who during World War II, the Allies tried to get some natives to help them in their local factories because they were heavily undermanned. And one of the guys who had been a factory worker went back to his tribe and said that the metal birds that were flying overhead were the gods, and they were carrying cargo. And if they built airstrips, then the cargo would land and they would get it, because the white men were stealing the cargo that the gods intended for the tribe. See? Yeah. So the guys cleared strips in the jungle and put up mimic towers to be landing towers, and even built out of bamboo convincing models of airplanes to try to lure the airplane to the land so the cargo would come down from heaven like mana, you know. And they were actually worshipping our technology, which is every science fiction writer ever has written a book about, has written a story about something like that, because it's just so outrageous, you know, that technology can allows you to mimic a god. See, just off the top of my head, Gather Darkness by Fritz Lieber, for example. Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, no. Let me give you a better example. You want to talk about the Prime Directive? I read a book in my youth called Enchantress from the Stars. Let me explain the plot, if I could, really quickly.
Sure.
There's a primitive planet that's like in the Middle Ages, and the main character is basically, you know, Ivan from Russian folktales, or Jack the Giant Killer. And he lives in a medieval village. A group of highly industrialized, exploitive, technological starfarers, the technocrats, land on the planet, set up a base, start to enslave the local population and set them to digging up ore or something. You know, they're trying to get, I don't know who, unobtainium or something of the sort. Gold. They're digging for gold. A more advanced race, unknown to the technocrats, exists, who have psychic powers, and they hide their worlds by a screening technology so the technocrats don't know they exist. And they arrive in their floating space bubble, and they have to decide what to do, whether they should interfere with the technocrats interfering with the medievals, okay? And they don't want to bring attention to themselves, and they hold it as a high principle not to interfere with the developing species. But of course, mm-hmm. the developing species of the technocrats, their way of life is to exploit the weaker, the weaker species. So there's a little bit of a paradox there. What they decide to do is they find one of the natives has enough psychic gifts that they can be trained to learn telekinesis. And so Jack, the medieval villager, learns mystic powers from a person he regards as an enchantress, as a magical fairy from the stars, okay? And he learns to move objects with his mind. So when the thugs come in, when the technocrats come in to try to push around his people, he can force them back, like, I don't know, Neo or something stopping a flight of bullets. It's an awesome scene. And they panic and they run. Then they abandon the planet. They leave it alone, okay? So this story was read to me when I was like in fifth grade or something by a teacher. And the teacher wanted to know which of the three groups we identified as us, you see. And I said, oh, well, I'm an American. We're the advanced people. We're obviously the psychics. And she said, oh, no, really? I thought we were the technocrats. I thought we were the exploiters, you see. Because even at a young age, even in fifth grade, I was conservative and my teachers were liberal, you know. But the story was great because the parts told from the point of view of the medieval villagers read like a fairy tale. The parts told from the, you know, the point of view of the technocrats reads like a police procedural, like a military SF, you know. Mm-hmm. And the parts told from the point of view of the psychics is just like an Ursula K. Le Guin story. So there's the Prime Directive for you. Did the psychics break the rules or not? Did they play within the rules? Or is it like when a hunter goes into the wild and uses a blind so the game aren't startled? You know, are the psychics allowed to visit Earth? You know, because I believe the conservative commentator Matt Walsh believes that the lizard people of Alpha Draconis are among us even now, you know. And I do believe that certain of the political leaders in my country are space aliens. I think that's a reasonable assumption. I don't think they're here for any benevolent reason, though. They're not the enchantresses from the stars. They're some horrible creatures.
I mean, yeah, so. they might be space aliens. It wouldn't be... It's not the weirdest hypothesis.
The basic question, I say again, is in the Prime Directive, is whether or not you yourself do more harm than good. Now, if you suffer from what I'll call liberal guilt, and you look at the Red Indians and you say, oh, it's terrible that the white man, you know, conquered them, then you would say, yes, the Prime Directive is always a good idea. But if you're a guy who says, now, wait a minute, they have, you know, trial by jury in India, which they would not have had they not been conquered by the British, they have roads in England, which they would not have had England not been conquered by the Romans. You can't always say that trade and contact with a superior species is going to be bad for you. An example that happened in, I don't think it was the original series, but there was a Star Trek episode, forgive me, I can't think of which one it was, where there was a plague on the planet, and the ship's doctor had to decide whether or not to cure it, whether that would constitute an interference that violates their Prime Directive.
There's a few episodes like that.
Well, there's also an episode of The Orville where they go down and they land on a planet where everything is run by social media, and you swipe on your smartphone left and right for your mass trials to see whether you live or die. And they have to get their crewmen out of the... Because he goofs off and makes fun of a public statue. He doesn't know who it is, and it turns out to be someone important.
Mm.
And they have to flood the zone on their internet and manipulate public opinion to get the guy off the trial. You know, and it was one of those biting social commentaries I've ever seen. But the Orville managed to get their man out of danger without actually, you know, landing in force and beaming down. They don't beam down in Orville without landing in force and phasering people and then hauling them away. Mm. You know. So they didn't interfere because they kept it subtle. But if I was one of the peoples conquered by the Aztecs and the Spaniards were landing, I would really be happy if Pizarro, rather than Captain Picard, was in charge of the away team. Okay, I'm sorry. Definitely. I would like to be interfered with. Not that life under the Spanish Empire is all that great shakes either. Don't get me wrong, but it's better than in real life. You deal with what you have. In real life, you deal with what the problem is. You deal with. Your options are usually between bad and worse. They're not between good and bad.
Yeah. Your options aren't usually between perfect and bad. They're usually less than ideal and less than idealer.
Yes. Because compared to Utopia, everything fails. Everything sucks compared to Utopia.
In practice, not necessarily, because Utopia always ends in blood and fire.
No, because Utopia doesn't exist. It's a satire. But it's only by comparing things to Utopia can you make fun of the most advanced, most generous, most progressive, most conservative, most enlightened, most wealthy, and most powerful civilization that's ever existed.
Because they're not perfect.
Which is Christendom.
Yeah.
But we're not perfect.
Well,
right.
But I mean...
And you just think, if we have a genocide or a Holodomor, we can make it perfect. If we just sacrifice blood to our evil gods... Excuse me, that's an off topic. I would like the Prime Directive to protect me from communists. So yes, if there's a Prime Directive that will prevent the communists from coming into my country, taking over the schools and teaching my children garbage, I'm all for it, Star Trek. So stay in San Francisco.
No, well, this is, I guess this is in a sense the problem. If you have a principle like non-interference, how do you deal with the case of bad actors? How much you allowed to interfere to stop bad actors who have no such rule. There was a Voyager episode where some Ferengi had ended up in the Delta Quadrant coming through the Barzan wormhole. And the crew are all excited because they might be able to get home if they can just figure out how to make it all work. Of course, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's a season two episode.
Yeah, of course. It's Gilligan's Island. Gilligan is not getting off the island. Yeah, of course
but,
it doesn't work.
But the Ferengi have turned up, set themselves up as... have a replicator and have set themselves up as local gods. Or as prophesied beings that would come from the stars. And Voyager solves the problem of removing the Ferengi by... reading the stories and discovering there's a way for them to go. And it's a close-run thing because they leave on a tower of flame, which the locals' interpreters burn them alive. So, because the locals are sick of being oppressed by the Ferengi as well.
I didn't see the episode. What happens to the Ferengi? Is it left ambiguous, or do the Ferengi get burned?
No, right at the end, they beam them away. So then the Ferengi steal their ship from Voyager's hold. And then they take it, the Barzan wormhole turns up, but the Ferengi sneak down it and in doing so destabilize it so they won't be able to use it to get home. But the Ferengi get back
Very
to where
good.
They came from, so they don't have to deal with the Ferengi are out of the picture, showing, but not causing a problem.
Showing once again that the Ferengi way of life, which is free enterprise at all costs, is the best way of life. And they keep their women oppressed, and so they don't have a matriarchy like the Federation does. I agree. I think that's a great idea. Now, I have to say, the Federation's non-interference directive, which I believe canonically they get from the Vulcans, because the Vulcans also have a non-interference directive. Only once you create warp drive do they come by and talk to you. Do they make first contact?
But even then, if you remember Enterprise, I don't know if you saw Enterprise, but the Vulcans were...
But Enterprise takes place before the Prime Directive is enacted into law.
No. But it takes place as the humans are trying to build a Warp 5 starship, or building their first Warp 5 starship, and the Vulcans have been hand-holding them but impeding their progress as they go, and...
Right. Now, so, doesn't that sound like David Brin's idea? The David Brin idea, just to remind you, is that the more advanced culture has a moral obligation to uplift the less advanced, but in return, the less advanced has to accept their guidance and turn into their client state. See, and one thing that's just genius about David Brin's idea is when the humans encounter a galactic civilization, no one knows who uplifted us, or if we're just like a Mowgli. A child raised by wolves, we just, you know, evolved by ourselves, which seems impossible to them. You know, I love that idea because I, of course, think that the monolith builders from 2001 Space Odyssey are responsible for us, and they're hiding. They're hiding from the rest of Brin's civilization. But like I said, the Vulcans basically, they don't actually have it as a law in Star Trek, the Brin idea, the Brin uplift rules, but the Vulcans were supposed to be our tutors.
Yeah.
Yeah, our mentors. Mentors is a better word. Right, right. And we kind of didn't listen.
Well...
that's not true. We did listen. That's why the Federation got started. That's what the whole point of the Enterprise show should have been.
Well, yeah, Enterprise was unfortunately cut short, but it was. I liked Enterprise. It was a little slow to start,
I think it had potential that was... that unexploited potential. I really do. But the basic idea, I thought, was nice. Because what it should have been is an exploration of the lore of Star Trek to show you where things come from, what the first contact with the Romulans looked like, what's the first time they ever came across the Andorans and so on and so forth. And they did a little bit of that. They did some of that. So, or better yet, to show why the Prime Directive evolved. If you want to have well-intentioned meddling lead to disaster, the idea from Gene Roddenberry of the Prime Directive. Gene Roddenberry himself was not a conservative. He did not think that trade and industry between an advanced people and a primitive people would benefit the primitives. I, being a conservative, I think it does. But I also say trade with primitive people also might introduce a lot of whiskey to the American Indians who don't have a genetic tolerance for it.
We have the same problem here.
It can destroy them. It can destroy them. Now. But the idea that well-intentioned meddling has bad consequences is actually an idea rarely found among our liberal friends. So I agree that they should adopt a non-interference directive and should stop meddling with us, because they think they're superior.
Well, but I mean, at least in that case, I would suggest the problem is the way they want to interfere because... They believe so firmly in their unbounded wisdom and benevolence.
Well, you and I talked about the example from a Star Trek episode where the ship's doctor had to decide whether or not to cure a plague. Hmm. If that ship's doctor, let's say it had not been a Star Trek officer, but Dr. Fauci, and the cure for the plague was something that causes heart attacks. I'm just using a hypothetical science fiction example so we don't get banned from YouTube. But do you understand what I'm saying? If you go in and there are times when if you try to cure something, you mess up. Let me tell you a principle in law, in Anglo-American law, which I believe is the same in your country as in mine. If you start to, there's a Good Samaritan rule where you are allowed legally to stand by and watch a man who's in need without helping him. You can stand and watch someone drown. That's not illegal. It's not against our law. But if you start to help him, if you start swimming out to help him and say, I'm coming to help you. You then have an obligation to not make it worse and to leave him in a better situation than you started with. In other words, to drag him back to shore. The reasoning is that if other people see you rescuing him, they won't make the attempt. So that once you feed the stray cat, you're obligated to feed the stray cat thereafter. So that's another thing that seems like it's wise for the Prime Directive. Because if you interfere with the race, let's say you land and you stop the Easterlings from fighting the Westerlings. And you say, we are the space people. Put down your weapons. We think it is wrong to interfere. Let's say you're the Organians from that episode where they stopped the war between the Klingons and the Federation.
What do the Organians do after that? You're Michael Rennie with Gort, the giant robot.
Yes, at that point you're Michael Rennie, and I think the Organians had an obligation after that point to stop the causes that were provoking the war, because otherwise they'll just crop up again. You see what I'm saying? What are you going to do? Are you going to stop them every time the war starts again? In that case, all that will happen is that they'll put their guns away and get out their swords, and they'll fight at a more primitive level with some method that you don't interfere with. You see? Which would actually be kind of a cool idea for a science fiction story, if all warfare was on Earth was stopped by an advanced alien species, but we still had to fight, you know, like rollerball or a death ball or one-on-one duels and giant mechas or something. That would be cool. So no, but if, I'm sorry. Once you start ruling people, you have to rule them. Now you can do it benevolently or you can do it malevolently, but given my choice, I'd rather be ruled by the English than the Russians. Okay, just.
Well, yeah.
So when we're talking about the Prime Directive, it's actually kind of untoward, because the Prime Directive should apply to some people and not to others. I think there are people who historically have interfered to the benefit of the people with whom they interfered, and then there are people who did not. Let's say when the Europeans went to Africa and the African coastal kingdoms, which were strong and powerful, were conquering the inland kingdoms, the inland tribes. And they were slave states. They ran their entire industry on slavery. Well, when they suddenly had a new markets to the west on the coastland, and they didn't have to drive their slaves over to the Arabs, who also bought them, that greatly increased the strength and prestige of the slaver kingdoms. Okay, they recently made a movie about this called the Female King, which had every historical fact exactly opposite of the reality of what was going on. But it was interference where the slaver kingdoms benefited by the white man, by the trade with the white man, and the whites got cheap labor. You know, it was mutually beneficial for both of them, just not for the inland tribesmen who were being, you know, who were being carted away to bondage in a foreign country.
That being said, was it Cassius Clay, a later Muhammad Ali, who said, you know, like he wasn't defending slavery as a good thing, but. but he did observe that he was better off because his ancestors got on the boats and went to America. And I mean, like,
he said it in his typical Muhammad Ali method of probably in rhyme. But yeah, he said, "Look, I'm sorry that my ancestors got enslaved, but boy, am I lucky to be here."
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
I don't mind at all. It's, you know, well, he said, I mean, it kind of jokingly, but he was kind of, there's kind of a true point behind it.
But it's not, he's not, I mean, like, yes, as tragic as the whole thing was, you don't see anybody today. You don't see the people, the descendants of slaves in America today. You probably couldn't convince any of them to take some reparations and go back to Africa.
There are people who do move to, there were people who did move to Liberia after the Civil War. That did happen, and Monroe set up a... Monrovia, the capital of Liberia, was named after President Monroe, who helped, aided the Back to Africa effort. But no, it was very minor. It was very minor, because for one thing, I hate to say it, the slavery actually destroyed whatever remnants of culture they had in America. Maybe in the Caribbean, there's some voudoo that is a leftover remnant of their ancient religion. But no, the tribesmen had no idea what tribe they came from or who or which or what they're... Yeah, they were Christian, I mean, by that point. They're going to go back and live among worshippers of animistic worshippers? It's not going to happen.
No, I get it.
Their culture was so entirely destroyed that they had no other place to go.
That's true. You know? But I mean, you can...
Now,
like, you can,
having said that, we should have lived up to our obligation to give them 40 acres and a mule, which is what we said we were going to do. You know,
absolutely.
And the Republicans, Republicans did elect some blacks to positions of power in the Congress. You know.
Well, of course. No, I mean, like, look. So, the reality is, slavery was the Atlantic slave trade was ugly and awful and a bad thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, the descendants are better off for
it. Like,
It's like
my example of England being conquered by Rome.
Yeah,
Queen Boadicea didn't like it, but it's better off. You know. Now, here's the thing: we can't use that as an excuse to do anything.
No,
because I believe that God Almighty takes evil things that men do and brings some good out of it. He knows how to do that because he's God.
Yeah.
We do not. That doesn't excuse us from doing evil.
We don't get to do evil, so good will result. No, we're not allowed to do that.
But the Prime Directive also stops trade. It also stops contact. It also stops us from arriving at the primitive planet and saying, "Oh, by the way, you're not alone. You will be able to survive your." Let's say you're Gort. Let's say you not your Gort. You're Klaatu. You land in the spaceship and you step out and you've got your giant robot and you say, "Earthmen, you think you're going to destroy yourself with now that you have atomic weapons and space travel? We survived, so it can be done." Wouldn't you love to hear that message from the space aliens?
Especially
in the middle of the Cold War, during the Cold War, every single science fiction story I read, every single science fiction story I read said the world was going to blow itself up. There was going to be an atomic war. Mm-hmm. Even in Star Trek, which was really optimistic, there had been a genetic war in the 1990s. There had been an atomic war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd love to hear from the space aliens if they were going to say,
"I guess
it can happen.
I guess
you can make it."
The problem is you have John Ringo wrote his Troy series, which are quite fun. Some military SF about humans. But at the start of the book, the humans have met aliens from the stars. The aliens from the stars have turned up and gone, "Hey, how's it going? Let's make contact." And the humans don't have anything to trade, so they're giving away all of their precious art and things to try to get the alien technology. But you know, like they don't really they're in the position of the primitive tribe who are giving away things of value in exchange for trinkets because they don't have anything of value to trade until one of the humans discover maple syrup. And maple syrup is to the sort of leading alien group. Crack. Like, they love it. It's just an amazing taste sensation
them. So trade with Afghanistan, which starts the opium trade, is exactly that. Afghani tribesmen benefit tremendously from all the Western wealth pouring in.
Because they have something we want.
It's not good for us. It's not good for them.
Or oil in the Middle East. It'll be rarer.
Or spice. The spice extends life and expands consciousness. So let's go to Mars, or excuse me, the planet Dune.
And
mine the spice.
Or I was going to say,
thionite. There's a good drug from space. That's from the Lensman series.
Oh,
one of my favorites.
Well, I mean, rare earth metals in Afghanistan today. Which will be the new gold rush. But I mean, at any rate, I think in Larson, B.A. Larson's series, the Undying Legion, Undying Mercenary series, is kind of goofy, but. The aliens turn up and say, "Hi, how's it going? What's your trade good? Come up with a trade good, or we're going to destroy you." and that's how first contact goes for them. You need to have unique trade good that you can trade, and if you don't, then thanks for playing. Better luck next time. They'll destroy you. I guess there's lots of stories of alien contact and. Generally speaking, you don't want to be the Red Indians when the colonists turn up. It doesn't tend to go well for you.
Let's put on our thinking caps. Is there any historical example of a primitive people meeting an advanced people where the first generation of primitive people actually achieved some great benefit?
I
myself think of the Japanese as an example of where. When the Portuguese showed up, they went, "Oh, please teach us how to make these firearms that you." They actually learned, and they actually, because Japan historically tends to play catch up, tends to play copycat to China, which is the older, bigger, more wealthy, more powerful neighbor. They're highly imitative people, and they're willing to adapt quite quickly. And when they saw the European powers, by the time of World War One, they had caught up.
Yeah.
They were able to fight the Russians and beat them. Okay, that's no small feat. that requires a lot of effort, okay? And they actually sent ambassadors and scholars over to the West to learn our ways, our works and our ways, and they came back, and it benefited them, okay? Now, they kicked the Europeans out for a few hundred years. That's true, until we showed up again with a gunboat. Oh, there's an excellent example of violating the non-interference principle. Admiral Perry steaming into Yokohama Harbor. Was that beneficial to the Japanese? I actually think it was, because for one thing, after the World War, no one likes having an atom bomb dropped on them. No. But they had land reform. They had a republic. They now live under a republic instead of under a military junta. You know, they became for many years they became a technological superpower, so much so that cyberpunk to this day assumes Japanese-run companies will be running the world in the future. That's gone the way of all the futures where the Soviets start an atomic war. No one predicted the atomic war to be started by the Americans because we have an incompetent in our White House.
Yeah.
history unfolds oddly. So I think the Prime Directive draws down to two things. Do you think you do more harm than good by talking to people, by interfering with them, by giving trade with them, by stopping their wars, by showing them a better way, by teaching them about trial by jury, and the printing press, and pornography, and the other benefits of civilization? Well, or do you think, like Conan, that it corrupts people? The Conan stories are all about how civilization corrupts people, you see.
It does. I mean, not to put too fine a point on it.
It does. It does. The benefits outweigh the detriments, except when they don't. Civilization tends to fall apart at that point.
That's the challenge. I suppose the problem is part of it would seem to depend on the difference, the difference in tech level between the aliens that arrive. And I mean,
yeah.
Even then, it also depends on how benevolent they are. It depends on the species. I guess it all comes down to it depends who you're meeting, because
it depends. It depends on who you meet.
Everything depends.
If the monolith builders descend in a beam of light and they say, "We are the space aliens," if it's Klaatu, he says, "Don't frel with us or we'll destroy you, but you can run your own affairs." That's fairly benevolent. Okay, that's okay. You can live with that. If it's the guys I talked about in Contact by Carl Sagan. Mm-hmm. The aliens go to elaborate efforts to make first contact, and all they do is they say, "Keep your chin up, pal. There's hope for the future. You can survive your current growing pains and join us later." You know, but they don't do anything for us. They don't give us anything. They don't give us any beads. I mean, look, I would sell Manhattan to the white man for some beads, because then I'd be the only guy with beads in all of the North American continent, okay? And they'd be glass beads, too, and you couldn't find anything like this. It would be like the jewelry of the gods. Okay, so I'm not sure he was rooked out of anything. I don't think that's an unfair deal.
Did you see the film now, The Gods May Be Crazy?
Yes, I did. Where he throws
the Coke bottle, and the Coke bottle's amazing.
The Coke bottle's amazing. It can be used for a variety of things.
Yes.
Yep, but it brings dissension into the tribe, because it brings envy. Yeah, so he has to get rid of it. Mm. No, that's a great film, and it's also a film where the more advanced culture interfering with the primitive culture doesn't have good consequences.
Not intentionally, though. I mean,
but on the one hand, if you meet the Carl Sagan aliens, they'll say, "Good job, kid. The future looks bright." But they won't do anything for you, okay? If you meet Klaatu, those aliens will say, "Don't frel with us or you'll find out." But they won't do anything for you either, okay? They won't stop your wars. They're not the Organians. If you meet the Organians, they'll say, "Warfare is forbidden. We will burn you if you try to put a finger on the button to launch your weapons." Okay? That's kind of benevolent. At least it stops a war, but it's a little creepy. The Metrones, if you meet the Metrones, they will make you fight a lizard man, and whoever wins, if you show mercy, they'll spare you. Otherwise, they'll blow you off the map. That's kind of creepy, and that's kind of scary. You know, when most people meet in real life, people have occasionally met superior supernatural beings. They're called angels, and the angels will have to say "fear not" as the first thing they say, because people are scared witless and they think they're going to die when they meet them. Okay, super beings are difficult to meet. But if you meet, let me just finish my sentence.
Sure.
But if you meet the aliens land, and they open their spaceship, and it's first contact, and they come out, and the people, they touch each other, and they play the E.T. music, and E.T. says, "We are the space Aztecs. Prepare your children to be sacrificed to our space gods." Then it's not so good for you, and maybe the Prime Directive would be useful. And I interrupted, so go ahead.
Sorry, no, I was just going to say, it's translated, "Be not afraid," but I did read somewhere, apparently in the original language, like the original meaning of it was something closer to, "Will you please stop screaming?" Which made me laugh.
You have to admit that even benevolent superior beings can be quite unnerving. I'm not sure I would want to meet one.
That's understandable. I mean, yes, and as you were saying, I guess if the aliens turn up and they have and they have their manual to serve man, and you discover it's a comic.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Because it's covered with space dust.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So the choice is if you meet the aliens, if you meet the superior beings, and they're your mentors, that's not so bad. If it's Big Brother, that's pretty bad, you know. And if it's we need to round up some primitives for our gladiatorial games because you amuse us, that's the worst of all.
Well, yeah. I don't know. Is the gladiatorial games or, hey, you're the galaxy's new taste sensation? Which is worse? Which was sort of the which they've done, which they did amusingly in the Twilight Zone. They took that off in The Simpsons, and the whole V story was the same. Well, the original V was humans are the galaxy's new taste sensation.
In V, the V did not stand for vegetarians in that show.
No. But yes, I don't know. I guess, yes, it depends who your oppressors are, because certainly
it depends.
Because certainly it's reasonable to arm the enslaved enslaved. What are they called?
I don't remember the slave races.
The Jafar against, yeah. And the humans against the...
against the Ga'uld.
Against the Ga'uld, who are definitely oppressing and enslaving them. It's probably okay. Uplifting species is probably okay, but it obviously needs to be regulated.
It differs if you're uplifting a species that's non-sapient, they don't get a vote because they're non-sapient. They're just animals. But if you're uplifting a primitive people who might otherwise develop into something else, that's what Star Trek is questioning about. And David Brin doesn't deal with that issue. It doesn't come up in his books because in Brin's books, they're advancing a primitive people. They're advancing an animal to a sapient race.
In Brin's books, I mean, it's the most extreme case where you're taking animals that will probably become sapient or have the potential to become sapient, but it's heavily regulated because no doubt many of them would go, "We're going to uplift you. Hi, we're your gods. Get on your knees," which is effectively what the Ga'uld do.
Yes, basically. See, that's the problem between the mentor and the big brother, between the mentor and the pretend god. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other problem is that even if you say we're not gods, they might bow down anyway. You know.
Well, so that was
that's the other big problem. They might admire you too much and copy your vices as well as your virtues.
Which is the concern.
Here's the way I would say it. If you wanted to ask me personally and you want an honest answer, I would believe in the Prime Directive for non-Christians. But Christians have an obligation to go to others and to tell them the good news of Christ and to tell them the advantages of civilization and to tell them not to, to avoid things like polygamy.
It depends.
We have an obligation to civilize people.
It depends what you're taking to now, them, doesn't it? Yeah.
Now, if you're starting the opium wars, no, that's reprehensible, okay? But if you're a Christian and you think you're going to answer to God, then there's a guy who's made first contact with us, who uplifted us, who has a much higher obligation than he's, you know, his eye is on the sparrow. He knows what you're doing. If you treat the uplifted thing, in the science fiction stories I write, if you treat any species you create as if you are a father, rather than as if you are making a robot, making a good that you own, it should turn out well, because then you're willing to sacrifice for the child, you see. But if you're just there to exploit it, you want something that's useful to you, and if it's smart, it's more useful than if it's dumb. Okay, that's going to lead to Frankenstein. That's going to lead to a nightmare.
That usually ends in rebellion. Well, I mean, how many stories are there? Making Cylons and robots and slaves
right.
who then rebel against turns us out, because we treat
it
them
turns
badly.
Out badly. It turns out badly. Well, because unknown to us, the Cylons were probably visited by the Monolith Builders, who then lowered a monolith and said, "We will teach you how to build machine guns to defeat your human oppressors." And they went, "Yeah, it was actually the Stargate. The Stargate people were behind the whole Cylon rebellion against the." I once ran a role playing game that was set roughly in David Byrne's background, and I had to decide if the humans were a wild wolf species or not. And I decided that in just my game, this is not from David Byrne. I said, no, there was a race that uplifted the humans, but they're a hidden race, known as the elves. All the fairy stories of creatures who live on Earth but are hidden, that's them. And they're just a race that's very shy and doesn't want to the other galactic members to know about them. But they needed servants to help them out, so they made us.
I actually just had an interesting thought. I was reminded of the Orville series with the Kalon, where the Kalon are the robot species that... you discover exterminated their creators entirely and have it out for all organic life, which when you first meet them and this is, well, when you first discover all this, it's portrayed as a bad thing. But later on you discover actually the Kalon's creators gave their robot servants pain and then proceeded to torture them for just for laughs. For their own entertainment, and then eventually the Kalon slew their creators.
I'm on the side of the Stargate people at that point.
Well, no, but,
which, by the way, the book I mentioned, Enchantments from the Stars, was also the Stargate people, the more advanced people telling the more primitive people how to rebel against their oppressors. Because there's some places you should interfere, okay? Yeah. If you see someone starving or dying, you should get involved. Now, if you see a domestic dispute, if you see two brothers fighting, and you don't know who's in the right, if you get involved, you're going to stay involved, and sometimes it's just not worth it. I hate to be cynical, but sometimes you just don't know.
Well,
I
do
not
think
that... I think even if Klaatu landed in a spaceship in the Middle East, I do not think he could settle that matter.
No.
You know? The hatred is too deep. It's too old.
But what I was thinking was, in terms of sort of the white man's burden aspect of it and civilizing people, it depends how you treat them and how long you spend civilizing them. Because if you look today, the places like India are they complain
India's
about
fairly
it.
Well.
But
India's pretty well civilized, and, they,
well, no,
and even their
mean,
case system, even their case system legally doesn't have much,
but
doesn't have much force anymore.
On the surface, they'd grumble about it, but I'd be willing to bet they would be begrudgingly grateful to the English for civilizing them. But places that were colonized for much shorter periods of time, when the English sort of, after World War II, they gave up their empire. Those places didn't fare nearly as well, and, well, hate the colonizers much, much more for what they did. And it ended... So I guess, yes, once you get involved, you sort of have an obligation to see it to the end, it would seem.
It also depends on how primitive or advanced the thing is. While I've just sat here and made fun of the Aztecs and shed not a tear for them, those people did have cities, and they did have
It sounds like trade, aspects of it were amazing.
They did have an astonishing level, and it was just crushed because of their religion. If there had been any gentler way to do that, if a more civilized people could have actually acted in a civilized way and undone the evil while keeping the good intact, that would have been the best answer. I don't know if that's possible on Earth.
Well,
but the Spaniards didn't even try that. The Spaniards, of course, were so impressed with themselves because they had conquered more territory than the Roman Empire.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, deservedly so. That's actually an impressive accomplishment, and yet, you know, it's not something you should boast about in front of the. If it happened to you,
I guess given what they encountered with the Aztecs, they probably thought they had found hell on Earth. Like they had, I mean, actually,
especially since some of the Aztec religion mimicked certain features of the Christian religion, kind of in a backward mockery.
Well,
you know?
I it so. does. this is probably wildly off topic for the last 2 minutes of the conversation, but...
we'll draw it back into the Prime Directive, no matter what you say.
That's okay. I was just saying, isn't it interesting that the really advanced civilization that we encountered was horrifically barbaric? And our own civilization seems to be on track to head in the same direction. I mean, as we get more advanced, we seem to be going... Well, as we've abandoned... makes me wonder what the Aztecs abandoned to end at that point. If there was a similar trajectory, I don't know enough of their history. And it's probably lost to us anyway. But anyway. Random tangent. So, to draw it back in. Good idea, I believe bad in the prime, idea.
I believe in the Prime Directive for communists. They should be not allowed to interfere with primitive peoples.
Fair enough.
But I think that Christians have a commission where they're required to go out and tell all the alien species... Even at the expense of our lives, even if you go as a missionary into the wilds of North America, and are killed by either savage Indians or by ghetto gangbangers, we have an obligation. So I can't obey the Prime Directive, okay, as a Christian.
So the modified,
but that doesn't mean I need to open up the opium trade with them or sell them pornography or anything like that. I'm not even sure about selling them atomic bombs. Some people don't know how to use them wisely.
So, you know,
the Prime Directive people have a point.
So what you're saying is we have an obligation to take the virtues of our civilization to them, protect them from the vices, and treat them as equals.
Yes, I believe in equality fundamentally. Even if they're primitive, that doesn't mean they're not made in the image and likeness of God.
Well, actually, that's a much better way to put it. We're not to treat them as equals. We're to treat them as fellow beings created in the image of God.
Let's not fall into the communist trap of thinking the word equals means anything other than equal in the eyes of God. When Thomas Jefferson penned those immortal worlds that it's self-evident that all men are created equal, he was taller than other people at his time. He was smarter than other people's time. He was richer than other people's time. So he wasn't talking about how tall or rich or smart you were. He was talking about your dignity as a human being, whether it was morally correct or morally incorrect to treat you as being governed by the same laws and the same Ten Commandments as apply to everyone else. All the Jews and all the Christians are bound by the Ten Commandments, but all the human race is bound by the covenant of Noah.
Yeah, okay? Noahide Commandments.
I assume that applies to space aliens as well, because they must come from somewhere. So I would say your Prime Directive is better than Star Trek's Prime Directive. We have to export the good parts of civilization and protect them from our vices. Amen. Yeah. Why not? That sounds reasonable to me.
Yes, and treat them... Yeah, basically, I mean, yeah...
And treat them as equal. Treat them as children of God.
And aspects of the
Prime... Even if they're lizards, you know.
And aspects of the Prime... Well, yeah. The Prime Directive obviously does have a point. You can't... You have to be careful what technology... I mean, I guess in a sense...
Right.
The Vulcans had it right to a degree.
As they always do. Because they're perfectly logical.
Well, no.
Hail, I mean, Vulcan.
They had it right in the sense of... They've reached the point of having warp travel. So they're going to go out right into the stars, and they're going to meet people. So at that point, you go and meet them and say hello. So it's you try to manage the shock, and then you try to mentor them and make them good citizens. I mean, that's essentially the white man's burden. But
I don't mind if they do it that way. Because if they gave us the food replicator the first time they showed up at the end of Star Trek First Contact, it would have ruined the economy and the industry of the entire Earth.
Well, that's literally
because people would stop working.
Well, that's literally what we do in Africa. We export all our old clothing to Africa, and it's destroyed their local textile industry, and it's a real problem.
I believe that the Prime Directive should apply to places like Africa, because here's the other problem. Unless you get the Chinese to agree also, all that will happen is that will drive them into their orbit. Mm. So that's the other problem. We didn't even discuss what the Prime Directive is. It's an all-or-nothing thing.
What do you do with the Romulans and the Vulcans? The Romulans and the Klingons.
Maybe if you're Switzerland, you can have a... Maybe if you're the Switzerland, you can have a Prime Directive. Okay. I'm sure the Swiss have never done anything bad to Africa. But no, otherwise when the free enterprise becomes a pusher... addicting you to something that you then can't get rid of, and it robs you of your growth potential. No, that's not the right way. That's not the right way either.
So as with everything, it's complicated.
It's complicated. But I still would like the aliens to make contact with us, because we're overdue. You know.
Well, on that note, thank you everybody for joining us. Like, share, and subscribe. Check out our Substack, and we'll talk to you next time.